My name is Olivier Bouin. I'm an economist. I'm the director of the Collège d'études mondiales. That would be loosely translated into the Institute of Global Studies, even though I won't get into the semantics, but there's a huge difference between mondial and global. But that's, you know, for another seminar or workshop to be discussed. And it's a rather young institution. It has been created 5 years ago. By the Fondation Maison des Sciences de l'Homme, and this building, for those who have been here in the past, these are the historical premises of the Fondation Maison des Sciences de l'Homme, created 53 years ago by Fernand Braudel, the French historian, and we've been moved away during 6 years for asbestos reasons, but these reasons were mostly possible financial reasons, like selling this building, which is definitely a prime location in Paris, to make a profit for the state and be able to compensate for lower revenues these days. But finally, they figured out that this building was inscrit au patrimoine de la ville de Paris, and so they could not change it and turn it into a Louis Vuitton Mwetensi headquarter, or we could think of any worse utilizations of this building. So we're back at the Fondation and Boulevard Raspail. And so the college moved back months ago, and we're still, as you know, and as you can figure out, still like working on the building. It's a work in progress that I love, works in progresses, but I hope that this one by summer will be done, so that we can work under like better conditions. But today I'm glad to welcome you all to this post-truth web and democracy workshop, and I would like to thank Maurizio Ferraris, Sara Gindani, Enrico Terone, Angela Condello for organizing this meeting. And since we're talking about media and the web, I think it's the third episode of the initiative that Maurizio decided to not transplant, but develop within the framework and the auspices of the Collège d'études mondiales about documediality, starting from his important work on documentation and documentality, and moving into some kind of new territory. So that the idea of the Collège is really to help 15 to 20 scholars to locate some of their research agenda in Paris and work with French colleagues and have a Western European perspective on some part of their work. And so we're trying to do some kind of epistemological / analytical work on the big transformations of contemporary societies, of global phenomena, and we're trying to renovate frames of analysis so that we could really better understand what's at stake when we talk about global societies, global cultural phenomena, and global political and economic phenomena. So we've been lucky over the past 5 years to host scholars, I'll still host them, like Manuel Castells, Nancy Fraser, Ulrich Beck, who had a chair with us but unfortunately passed away a year and a half ago, but other less well-known or renowned colleagues such as Marc Florbet, economist and philosopher of Princeton University, Vinke Menguyen, an anthropologist and physician working on the anthropology of global health. So we've been trying to create this environment where we can talk about important issues in a global framework. Global means, from my point of view, three things: international, or world dimension of it, i.e. a discussion across with different intellectual traditions located in different places of the world. This means interdisciplinary, not only multidisciplinary, not only a collage or a montage of disciplines, but trying to embark into some kind of epistemological and methodological work, and to have time to do it. And the third one is innovation. So we try to not rehash the same thing over and over. We just started a new chair with a French anthropologist, Marc Abeles, who has been known for working on the anthropology of politics, the anthropology of representation, the anthropology of survival, and now is launching a new cycle of research on the global anthropology of luxury. And so we're really trying to host scholars to develop a new step or a new part of their research agenda. Again, it's not to ask Maurizio to work again on documentality, on neorealism, or things that he has been doing in the past, but to try to bring forward and to the forefront the new kind of intellectual and scientific agenda. So this is the third episode, because 2 years ago, like November 2015, we had the first seminar on total mobilization on the web, and some of you were already attending, I mean John Searle and others were already attending that first episode. And then there was a second episode moving from total mobilization to post-truth, truth, and the web. And then the third episode adds a third component, that is democracy. So we're moving forward in a sense. It's post-truth, web, and democracy. And I think it's very much in the spirit of the college to keep moving and to keep moving on. Not that we were impatient because we are unhappy where we are, but we think that things move forward and we actually need to bring different scholarship, different concepts, notions on the table to be discussed. And we really appreciate the type of format, the workshop format or the brainstorming format, where we're not here to en représentation, to make like the big egoistic show of ourselves, but trying to work together. And so I hope this day, and I'm sure the past days organized by Maurizio and Enrico and Sarah and Angela have been really productive and conducive to really interesting breakthroughs. So I hope this will be the same for today. I will attend the morning session. Unfortunately, when events like this take place in the building, as am I also the co-director of the Fondation Maison des Sciences de l'Homme and the director of another foundation located in this building, after like 2 or 3 hours, they keep like asking me, where are you? So, and it's a big question of où es-tu? So, thank you for coming. I hope this this day will be fruitful. And a final word: what we usually say and what we usually do is that do not hesitate to get back to us during the day. Sarah is here. Maybe Gwenaël with the other assistant director to the Collège d'études mondiales. Sarah is for scientific affairs. She's more for partnerships and initiatives. We will be happy to learn more about what you could do with us, or whether you would like us to support some of your initiatives. Could be within the framework of what Maurizio is doing as a sequel to this event, but this could be something that you would think that we could provide some support. We are a support foundation. We're here to support your activities, and if they meet with the three, I would say, dimensions: international, interdisciplinary, and innovation, we will be happy to support in the capacity we can have in the coming month and years. Thank you. So now I pass the floor to Enrico Terrone, who will serve as moderator for this morning. Usually I'm the one who keeps the timing sharp. So if you do not enforce this strictly, I will make signs. Usually I make a 5 minute sign, and then a 2 minute sign, and a 0 minute sign, and then I stand up so that there's kind of physical coercition around. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Olivier, Sarah, and Enrico. Thank you for you all to coming for this this conference, which is really supposed to be brainstorming, because I should say that I have not a theory, not even a clear idea about what post-truth is. I have not a true theory about post-truth, but only some intuitions. And a kind of surprise, because just compare this. New York Times is pure propaganda, and this has been written by Noam Chomsky about 2 years ago. And then we have the fake news media, New York Times, etc., is not my enemy, it is the enemy of American people, and this is Donald Trump 2 months ago. Which is surprising that, in a sense, Noam Chomsky and Donald Trump agree about New York Times. And this is the most surprising fact that has to do with post-truth. There is, of course, lies always existed. What is surprise is that there is a sense in which Chomsky and Trump can agree. Well. This is, in a sense, my question, what to do with post-truth, and I have a premise. Post-truth exists. It's not just a variation of the lying politics. It is something radically different from the metaphysical, political, technological, and anthropological point of view, because you know, when the term post-truth appeared very recently, people say, well, what's the problem with post-truth? People always lied, so there is nothing new in post-truth. The first part of my short presentation would be to say that, in fact, there is something specific in post-truth. Starting from metaphysics, so to speak, and this is the most obvious point, at least in my eyes. And has to do with postmodernism. The classic lie is only justified by the liar's interest. The classic lie, I mean the lie in general, Ulysses or Pinocchio or whatsoever lies, the classic lie aims to deceive the recipient. The post-truth lie is based on the romantic and postmodern criticism of truth. Therefore, paradoxically, is made in the name of an higher truth. This is something really relevant from a metaphysical point of view. The post-truth lie aims to emancipate the recipient. And is this specifically postmodern? There is something which is specifically postmodern in the idea of post-truth and the lie of post-truth. Because you can recognize the difference. When, in a sense, it was only apparent, the similarity between Trump and Chomsky, because when Chomsky says that New York Times is pure propaganda, stays, so to speak, in a modernist stance and say, I am a scientist, I am the editor of the tradition of Enlightenment. Enlightenment says that in a Socratic way, truth makes people free. So since I am a scientist, I am entitled to criticize the ideological lies of New York Times. Since I am also the heritage of idealistic theory that science has no practical purposes, so that I can stand as a criticist of ideologies based on practical purposes. And as you know, this is the classical discourse of modernism, which has been sketched by Jean-François Lyotard in 1979. And for instance, Lyotard said that in a sense, Marxism, which is not the case for Chomsky, but can apply in other cases, was the link between the grand récit of Enlightenment and the grand récit of idealism. So that there is this kind of continuity. Well, postmodernism is different. It's different because in postmodernism you don't say, I am a scientist, so that I am in a link to truth. In postmodernism you say, truth is a vehicle of will to power. Science is an instrument of domination, so that in order to emancipate, we have to give up with the truth. For instance, take an ironical stance toward what we say. I'm just kidding. I'm not saying the truth, or a kind of desublimation, in the sense that reason is not a way of emancipation, is a way of domination, so that you have to do with other instruments, and the most instrument is, for instance, desire or something which is not rational. This is a criticism. It is an heritage of Nietzsche's criticism of science, a Dionysiac revolution against the reason, and the objectification. Objectivity is not the true basis for democracy. Solidarity is the basis of democracy. We should be much more in touch with solidarity than to objectivity. Much more relevant is democracy than philosophy, which in a sense is true. I also agree that solidarity is much more important than objectivity, and democracy is much more important than philosophy. But I cannot understand in which sense there will be an alternative between democracy and philosophy, and solidarity and objectivity. I don't even understand how you can be solidar without being objective. So, this is the result. In a sense, we as Italians were especially advanced in post-truth, because Italian populism of the last 20 years was in fact the perverse realization of postmodern critique of truth. By this, I don't mean that Berlusconi or Trump wrote The Philosophy in the Mirror of Nature or whatsoever. I simply say that this kind of criticism of of objectivity and of science converged, in fact, with the classical populist view. What is the difference between, for instance, Marxism and populism? Typically, is we Marxists are scientists. We populists are for emotions, feelings, and so on and so forth. And this was also, in a sense, the criticism, the Nietzschean criticism of postmoderns to classical intellectual status of science. Well, this is from a metaphysical point of view. In politics, in fact, the classic lie is justified in the name of princess interest or of national interest, raison d'etat. This was the classical justification of lie in politics. Now, the justification in post-truth is different. The post-truth lie is justified in the name of a populist alliance between the prince and the people, and is often not a lie, but an error, a false belief expressed against the belief, which perhaps is true, of some authority. Now, this point, usually, post-truist, so to speak, never say a lie. They simply say that some other people are lying. New York Times lies, doctors lies, scientists lies. I have my personal truth, and my personal truth is not a lie, but is the true truth. One can do in a previous conference we have done here in Paris, who has been mentioned by Olivier, I tried to make a kind of rereading of post-truth truth in with the categories of Paul Dries, you know, the four categories of conversation. And in this sense, the category of quantity is bullshit, the quality is lie, the relation is hoax, and the modality is fashionable, not nonsense. But since we don't have to repeat something as already said, what I want to suggest that the problem is not Trump. The problem of post-truth is not Donald Trump or whatsoever. It's different. The problem is technology. In a sense, I would say, yes, it's something surprising to say there is no responsibility in Trump, the responsibility is in technology. But in fact, we can say it is so because if I wonder how Trump could speak if Twitter does not exist. Imagine a situation without Twitter. The declaration of Trump should be examined by newspapers or by TV broadcasting, maybe of the property of Trump. Of course, there is no problem about that. But they have a kind of mediation. Whereas when Trump says that he's the victim of the great witch persecution of the history, he can say this only because he has this kind of technological device not existing a few years ago. And in fact, a few years ago, what now we call post-truth was not existing. The most relevant phenomenon of post-truth is what I would call horizontality. The classic lie goes vertically from the liar to the recipient and is often not archived. I mean, I am a liar. I lie to you. What is the matter of moon? Answer, the cheese, for instance. And then I say, well, the moon is made of cheese, and that's all. Scientists say that the moon is made of cheese. In the post-truth lie goes horizontally from the liar to the receiver, and from the latter to other receiver, and so on, and it's archived. What is interesting of post-truth is that I say vaccination causes autism, and doctor says that vaccination, doctor lies, I know that vaccination causes autism, and so on, and so forth. This is the way it works. And this gives a look on anthropology. Post-truth is allowed by a technological device which is an archive and make that any receiver is also a broadcaster, so that in a sense the post-truth is not the tweet, it's the retweet. Is the virality created by the retweet, and also by an anthropological and sociological situation, which can be called atomist. The classic lie is addressed to a cohesive society and aims to strengthen cohesion. Conspiracy theory, the class enemy, the Jewish truth, this as a typical kind of classic lies that was used in ideological churches of last century. Right now the situation is that the post-truth lie spreads through the circumscribed circuits, as you know, this is very well known. It is interesting that the Aristotelian Thomas Aquinas said something which is a criticism of Aristotle. It's very truth, especially for Italy, where Aquinas was coming from. Man is not a political animal, he's a family animal. And the fact that man is a family animal relies on small circuits is typically the fact of post-truth. We have very small areas that share the same conviction. What to do? Very shortly, I don't know whether it's the good solution, but from a metaphysical point of view, I will go faster and is the useful, how useful is the new realism in the sense that the new realism is a criticism of postmodern constructivism based on the ontological, technological, and epistemological resource of the real. But since in this case I should repeat things that I said in many other times and were not able to contrast post-truth, I would go skip really to the directly to politics and technology, and then to end to anthropology. This is not in order to avoid that Olivier stand up. Who is responsible for postmodernist? Obviously not. I don't believe that there is a direct responsibility of postmodernism in post-truth. Who else? What else? In a sense, it's simply a matter of inflation of documents. When we have so many documents, which is the case with the web, then we have the situation in which post-truth can grow up. Post-truth is the quantitative transformation of the classical lie, and is also a technological implementation of classical life. Note that this is not the first time in history, because, for instance, this is a book of an historian of right, in Pennsylvania, that appeared about 20 years ago, and he said, well, there was a crisis of truth in Middle Age England, because there was the change from the truth as a direct commitment from persons to the truth are mediated by documents, and this created a crisis of truth. Or even Husserl, with the idea of the crisis of European science, one of the cause of the crisis of European science in Husserl's site is precisely the inflation of documents, too many documents. By the way, this has been proved right now, because one of the problems is that we have plenty of fake articles on scientific journals, and this precisely because of the inflation of documents. From the technological point of view, what I suggest to call documediality, which is the documentality as the basis of social structures, and the mediality, the fact that any receiver is also a broadcaster, is maybe something that can explain our situation better than the capitalism. Because you still read description of nowadays situation as the extreme phases of late capitalism. I would say that is completely different. For instance, there is not a production of goods as the best. I would say capitalism was an excellent way of explaining situation for the Europe of the world of last two centuries, and it was based on the technological disposal of the epoch. Now I would say is much more this kind of situation, mixed between inflation of document and perverse use of media, that creates this form of political constraint and raises the most important issues for democracy. Are we able to manage this this different situation? I would say that fact-checking and reputation are not the problem and cannot solve the problem. Usually people say, well, we should improve fact-checking and make studies for reputation. We'll not deny that they are useful, but they are not the solution, because in the sense of fact-checking is always repeating the lie. So, and reputation is something very problematic. The point is to have a clear idea of documentality in the same way as in the time we had a clear idea or a clearer idea of what capitalism was. The problem is the documentality. We still don't understand. We still don't understand the new situation created by the web, especially in the issue of democracy and of truth. And we need, in this sense, a practical reason for the web. I believe that people in 50 years, when they look at the nowadays web, they will say, oh, how savage, ridiculous, inaccurate was the web at the beginning of this millennial. And we have an important task is to create a practical reason for the web in the same way in which it was tried to do something for understand and for correct or match to capitalism. Last conclusion, one point which is an anthropological one. From a metaphysical point of view, post-truth is the extreme phase of say constructivism. I construct everything, I am the owner of the universe. On the other side, there is also something which is typical of the web, and this is the fact that on web people usually don't do really act, but simply make statements, indignation. I mean, I am indignated for this and this. This, again, this is not new, is the result of something which is classical in the cultural heritage of last two centuries, namely the Pharisaism that culminates in post-truth, placing the moral values in the idea that are postulated rather than the action that are taken. This is also a serious problem that cannot be obviously solved by a study, say, of documentality, but is one of the most effective reasons that lies in a situation in which we are so often indignated and almost never acting. Thank you very much.
Okay, so questions? First question? Then, yeah?
And if I may, could you introduce yourself in one word and then short, crispy questions and short, crispy answers? We're only 15 minutes of exchange after each talk, so.
Crispy. It's going to be hard. I'm Paul Bogosian, and philosophy professor from NYU.
Maurizio, thank you. That was very interesting. I would, since I'm restricted to a very short remark, just say that I think it's very dangerous to talk about post-truth, that we live in a post-truth era, as though we live in the same way in which we might say we live in a post-dinosaur era. There are no more dinosaurs, so we are in a post-dinosaur era. No, truth is there. When we say we live in a post-truth era, we're only saying that certain people are behaving vis-a-vis truth in a way that is, in fact, distinctive and objectionable. And one might outline three different things that consists in. One of them definitely does have to do with postmodernism, because postmodernism made us suspicious of the very idea of the truth, and therefore made it possible to talk about alternative truth and alternative facts. The other is a kind of, again, connected, I think, to postmodernism and pragmatism, the suspicion that the people that we thought were most capable of finding out about the truth, namely science and rational means, these are in fact to be considered as just one way of going about things. There are other equally valid ways of doing it. And the third component is the thing that most interests you, which is the role of the web. That is, when you have such vast powers of disseminating anything, in particular, that's going to cause so much noise in the system that ordinary people with limited capacities to find out about these things are going to get very confused and easily manipulated.
Thank you very much. I perfectly agree on the fact that this essay of Weltanschauung theory, we live in the post-truth era, is a typically post-truth sentence. Who informed me, for instance? It was not informed of living in a post-truth era. I just read it on New York Times, but since New York Times is pure fake news and so on and so forth, there is no way out. What is true, and what I personally believe, is that, of course, there is not a change in truth, but the most important, I think that you two agree, what is really new that induced this false term post-truth was the changing of the technological situation in the world. And I would say, because, for instance, there is a really different attitude of people. For instance, the classical explanation of people's behavior is utility. We all act for utilitarian purposes. But seemingly, now people on the web does not act for utilitarian purposes, but for self-affirmation and self-recognition, attitude. For instance, I find false the classical interpretation of selfie as narcissism, because don't forget that narcissists were just looking at themselves in a tain, whereas the selfie narcissist want to be recognized by the entire world. So it's I would say that it's a pretty different explanation that cannot be became understandable in the classical way of capitalism.
Okay, Professor Stern.
Well, I had a dumb question. You used a word I'm not familiar with, Pharisaism. Is that the biblical Pharisees?
No, there is some people say that we can explain the theory The idea of, which is typical in Kant, for instance. In Kant, the important is the intention and ideas you profess. Of course, in Kant, it's also important what you do. But in Pharisaism, is the situation that my moral value consists in the ideas I profess and not in the action I do. For instance, I go to a dinner, make a criticism of, say, Trump or the SUV, and then I do what I do, what I want. This is the typical Pharisaism. Yes.
Other questions?
Yes?
Yeah, I would just like to challenge mostly Professor Bogosian in the sense because he said one problem is that we're challenging the scientists as the ones that lead us into truth. It's related to your other question. I would just like to wonder, well, isn't that what happened in, like, isn't this idea that the scientists get us to the truth just another, like, it wasn't always so. There was a crisis, let's say, with the birth of revolution, with the birth of science. Some other people were supposed to be getting to the truth, and then this other class came up and said, we're not having this. So maybe this might just be not Byzantine, like not something totally new after all. Like we might be seeing, as you said, this democratization. The web might be getting, we might actually be entering a new sort of era where probably some other way of getting to the truth will get born, or we'll just move away from this concept that was reigning for some years. Just an idea.
So, who answered the question? Professor Bogosian?
First Bogosian, then Ferraris.
Well, of course, you know, the scientific revolution stems from the 17th century, although the methods of science probably antedated that considerably. But it is a very interesting and difficult question in epistemology, meta-epistemology, how we validate that certain procedures are the correct ones for determining what is true. And maybe in some cases we might even think there are some very small alternatives to the things that we know, logic, inductive logic, inference of the best explanation, and so forth. But it really is the core of a kind of postmodernism about the rational, to think that, oh, that's just one method and there are lots of other methods for getting at the truth, tea leaf reading maybe, or astrology charts and so on. Now, you know, even if you are unable to refute that, it clearly is, I mean, the mark of sanity to think that these established procedures that are part of common sense also, not just special to science. Science is just an extension of common sense. These are what led us to believe that climate change is real. And, you know, it is the height of the abuse of the notion of truth and of rational ways of acquiring it to say, there is no privileged way. So you say climate change is real, I say it's not real. Let's just go on. And the seas continue to rise.
No, point is that quantity transform itself in quality, to be Hegelian. I mean, in the moment in which there are half of the people in the world that express their own opinions with the same authority, is in a sense the realization of United Nations chart on the free of expression. In the other sense, it's an extreme confuse situation in order to catch what is the authority and the reality. This is, in a sense, post-truth. Because, it's like the liberalization of telephone company. Once it was very uneasy to have a connection with the phone, but you have no choice, and it was safe in this limit. Now you have a gigantic quantity of offers, and you never know whether it's the best one you get. This applies for truth also.
Thank you.
Okay, the lady there.
Yeah. I actually just want to say, you were talking about the weapon, this democratization. You before were talking about the political animal versus the family animal. And I think there's a distinction to be made about the web now, as it is nowadays. That is that what I see is not civilization. It's not the political animal. It's domestication. And that, for me, is that means something. And not the problem is not Trump, but the problem is what is it that we're learning in the way that we're reacting to Trump. And I think there's something about this distinction with what is the public realm, what's the social realm. And now we're constantly being asked to reply in sort of the emotional sense. And I wanted to say something also about this. That you said the problem with, or the Trump thing is that he can reply on Twitter, and then you said there are no gatekeepers anymore, but there are still gatekeepers, and that in a sense also makes still a question about capitalism to some degree, but I think of gaining a better understanding of what the gatekeepers and how they're shaping is really essential to this investigation. Basically what I'm trying to say is that the ways in which the web structures are sort of is in so many more ways than just that they're, you know, different gatekeepers.
Quick answer, since let's ask one question.
Sure. The question of a gatekeeper is really important. You are right, because basically the head are 20 persons knowing each other based in San Francisco, and then maybe you know some gatekeeper of the web, John. I mean, there are very few people that takes the ultimate decision, so that an analysis of this should be absolutely necessary.
Professor Ndarumi?
Well, there are many ironic turns in cultural history. One example is the peace movement opposed the theory of, or the strategy of, mutually assured destruction. This is highly immoral. And then Reagan took it up and said, well, you're right, it's highly immoral, so we have to develop the initiative of Star Wars initiative, yeah, so tactical nuclear weapons and so on. And I think there is an analogy to that debate. So there was a long period in which Marxist intellectuals in France and in Italy and in Germany and partly also in the US said, well, we know the truth and we have to tell the people how it is really and then change the world. This didn't go so good as thought, and there was a expertise based on nuclear physics telling, well, nuclear energy is the solution, and then it didn't go that well as was assumed. And then there are two paradigmatic reactions possible. One is, well, let's think about, is our theory right? Are the criteria right? Have we made some very basic mistake? Or maybe there is no way of finding out how things are or ought to be, postmodernism. And so I think, in fact, there is a responsibility of modernism for postmodernism, for Berlusconi and truth. So it's an ironic turn that, well, okay, so expertise is of no use anymore. And now we fight. Yeah? It's only a power game, and that's all in politics. So one should say more about it.
Okay, thank you.
We have time for a last question, Professor Cappelletto.
If you can hear me, I hope so. I wanted to ground the notion of post-truth, because when you say on the web, finally, we think about people that are nowhere, or they can be nowhere. So I would like to add on your different categories, anthropology, technology, the space, because it's not indifferent, the fact that you can speak, like you can make a statement about something that is happening somewhere else in respect where you are supposed to live. So this element of de-specialization is, I think, an element very important in order to construct a post-truth.
I think you are perfectly right. It's much more easy to lie in a no-place situation. You have no responsibility. This is a very good point, in fact.
Okay, thank you, Professor Ferraris.